The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Little Chinese fire drill here in the studio as Doug Hughes joined me live. He was in the far left seat. Nick, now he's in the close shotgun version here in the studio. We were scrambling around before we went on air here. So welcome, everyone, to Your Money with David Hayes. Very excited to have you with us throughout this next 43 minutes of talk time or 1 hour of total listening time. We'll have Hot Rod on in just a few minutes. We had some inflation numbers come out this week. We've had lots of data come out this week. We have had inflation hits lowest level since 2001. The CPI rose 5% in March, but pickup in core prices keeps the Fed hike on the table for the meeting in May. None of us thought that would not happen. So we'll get Hot Rod's opinion on that. The 10-year and the 2-year yields declined. It's crazy how the rates are starting to come down quickly. And that's why over the last month or two, maybe longer, we said to folks, listen, I know you're going to get sucked in with this 1 and 2 year rates on CDs or treasuries or whatever it might be, and you think to yourself, why would I buy something that's 5 years out or 10 years out that pays 1% less than I could get on something that's 2 years out? Well, because in 2 years, you're going to be glad you own that 4% paper that's out there for 10 years or 7 years or whatever it might be. And that's just the way the world goes. I learned that lesson in early 1990, when I was working at Shearson Lehman Brothers in Indianapolis as a lowly intern, and they were talking about the yields and yield curves back then, and I learned it then and convinced people that it's okay to take a lower return to reduce long-term risk. Long-term risk would be call risk, which means that I can pay you off early. The other thing is rates go down. You were glad you have those higher rates that you put out there on the curve a little bit further. So just a lot of things to think about when it comes to making right decisions. And as we've said last week, and I'll say again, we have revamped our message to say, listen, we are here to inspire, to create conviction, and create action. That's been our goal for the last 20 years on this program, but we finally put it into words. So we're going to have a good show today. Let's do a little news, not news of the week, but let's do our sponsors some good here. Kenny Bland Auctions. Dirk just texted me a few minutes ago. They are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. When Dirk calls me or texts me, his image comes up, and it's not his face. It's not a Kenny Bland Auctions truck. It's actually a mess of morel mushrooms. So hopefully we get out and hunt those in the springtime, and I guess they're up now. Lance Like at the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind. It comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at 812-323-8300. We're going to talk later in the program a little bit about gift taxes and gifting and all of that good stuff that is very confusing to people. And then lastly, Unrivaled Electric. They want to be your full-service electrical contractor like they are mine. They specialize in generators, which we've needed over the last month, and solar arrays, which we could have used this week. Veteran-owned, Unrivaled Electric, 812-361-3604. Doug Hughes is in the house. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to get Rod on the phone. And then later on, this is the main purpose for having my world traveler friend, Dr. Douglas Hughes, in here. I'm headed to France on Friday night in between the Thursday broadcast and the Saturday morning replay. And when it comes to France, what's going on? Well, they're in an uproar about increasing the retirement age for workers from 62 to 64. Why are they in an uproar over that? That's why Doug is here. He's going to help us through that. And we have some great, great things coming up that he can talk about, some shareholder meetings and different things with a French fella that runs a huge, huge mutual fund, very well known. But we got a lot to talk about, so I better shut up. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Rod Holloway joins us on the telephone. Of course, Hot Rod is on Glass in the Afternoon on Mondays and Fridays. Pinch hit for me this Wednesday so I could hit the lake and do a little crappie fishing with my dad. Thanks for doing that, Hot Rod. I appreciate it very much. No one ever gets tired of hearing you, and that's why we have you on the show again. Inflation numbers hit lowest level since 2001. Wall Street Journal headline this morning on April 13th, 2023. CPI rose 5% in March. But the pickup in core prices keeps the Fed rate hike on the table for the meeting in May. Not a big surprise there. Rob, we've been watching this kind of unfold here over the last month. No big surprises there, right?
No, most certainly not. I think the thing that is interesting and we have to keep our eye on is, as you alluded to, the core actually had a slight uptick from last month. So it came in where it was estimated to come in at 5.6. But that was actually a little bit higher than what last month's reading is. So, you want to see the consistent dropping. So that's the only reason that you look at it and say, okay, hey, why is core getting sticky? But I think all along, many people have felt as though inflation was going to find a sticky point somewhere down in maybe the 4 to 5% range. Obviously, we're still above that 5, so we haven't cracked below it. We are kind of approaching the federal funds rate as far as where that number is, and we've talked about that historically in the past the Fed has fought inflation by moving interest rates above where inflation was setting at. So I think that's why it does make sense that right now there's roughly a 70% probability of a 25 basis point increase in May. The Fed hasn't changed their stance. Their number one focus is on inflation. They have alluded to the fact that what was going on in the financial world with the three banks that had failed, that maybe that would be deflationary in itself and help offset a little bit of what they're doing. But I think the other side is some of the actions they're taking to prop up banks isn't really quantitative easy. But it's also no longer quantitative tightening either. So it's not a full-blown injection of liquidity into the economy. But they are most certainly stabilizing some of these smaller banks and allowing them to move some of their assets over to borrow with the Fed at par value versus market value of those bonds. Because all banks are in similar situations as to part of what hurt SVB and Signature Bank and those other ones, and in which a lot of their reserve investments are low-yielding bonds. So as yields went up extremely rapidly in the last year, well, that means the prices of those low-yielding bonds went down considerably. Now, those larger banks with a lot of capital and not having a major run on the bank, meaning not a lot of depositors taking those dollars out, it isn't a disaster for them to hold those lower-yielding ones. It's if they get a run on the bank and they have to start selling assets that they had marked to hold to maturity, and now you take that big hit when you have to start getting liquidity to cover redemptions. And that's kind of what happened over at SVB. As we said, that was kind of a unique situation and not something we expect to see widespread throughout the financial world. But there is no doubt we have seen a trend of withdrawals coming out, really of all size of banks. Even the big banks have had a decent amount of withdrawals. But, of course, that small, local, community-type bank has had a little more withdrawals, and those dollars have found their way over into the big boys out there. But we've said all along, well, we're not going to ignore it. We're going to pay attention. We're not going to make any assumptions that this doesn't spread into something bigger than what we've seen up to this point. We do believe that it is a fairly unique situation that caused the three banks that have currently failed to fail. And yes, maybe there are a few others, but I don't think very much of the financial institutions out there were playing the same type of games as those banks were.
Consumers still doing pretty darn good. At least they're still spending money. And, you know, the labor market's still pretty tight, so we have maybe a little ways to go. Core services, the inflation number clocked in at 7.1%, so those are our services that we use every single day, and that doesn't seem to be going down anytime soon. That's where the price pressure on wages have also occurred. You know, you can't get anyone to work unless you pay them a little bit of dough, and that's where it all goes. So listen, Rod, this is all fun to talk about, fun to speculate, but at the end of the day, when it comes to the markets, it's very difficult to predict where we go and even why we are where we are today, being up like we are for 2023, because math would tell me we should not be up, you know, the way we are. But the markets don't always follow the math or the logic.
Yeah, most certainly not. And in between times of important information coming out, obviously around the Fed meeting, around CPI coming out, earnings season, when you get into that, you know, then a lot of it gets driven off of technicals. You got a whole lot of computer trading that goes on out there in which things are just pre-programmed in, and when something happens, a certain level is breached, the computer gets a signal that, oh, okay, well, we've gone through this level, that triggers us to buy, and they start buying. So in the intermedium of news that is going to move the market, yeah, you kind of get whipsawed around based on technicals. And that's what I've said. Well, fundamentally, I haven't fully trusted this year's rally. Technically, it can't be ignored. You have busted through multiple layers that had been resistance. You have held above a decent amount of those layers, as we have had a slight pullback after the big run in January and February that we had. But we're still holding above a bunch of those. I think we are kind of setting in a key area in which if you have a little more selling, you start to break a couple more of those levels, which could trigger some of that computer selling that says, okay, hey, we've now breached support levels. It's time to be a seller as opposed to a buyer. And then, of course, starting tomorrow, the earnings season as far as the regular quarterly calendar earnings seasons. We've got earnings all throughout the year, but a large majority of companies run on a regular calendar year, so that's why you get a lot of earnings reports on the regular end of a calendar quarter. That'll start this Friday. Predominantly the big banks is kind of where it kicks off. Mm-hmm. J.P. Morgan, I think Wells Fargo both on Friday. And then obviously as you get into the next couple of weeks, then you're going to have a whole lot of earnings. And that's going to have an impact because it's expected that earnings are down, but the real question is, okay, earnings are down for the first quarter. Maybe they're down for the second quarter. Do we begin to see a rebound in earnings in that third and fourth quarter? Because as we know, the market is always forward-looking. So if the market sees that earnings are going to recover later this year, you probably don't get a huge sell-off because of lower earnings in the first and second quarter. But that's what we're going to have to wait and hear from the CEOs and the CFOs who are on those conference calls after they report the earnings.
We're going to pull Doug into the conversation here. I was with a friend, a client this week who you know well, and you'll know who I'm talking about. He was talking about the peak of his account values, January 22nd of 2022, and he said, I'm still not back to even, what, almost a year and a half later. Not quite a year and a half, but well over a year later. He said, yeah, we were negative about 12% in 2022 with about an 80% equity portfolio. The S&P, by the way, folks, by the by, was down 18 and a change for 2022. Bonds were down 13 and some change in 2022. So not bad. So I calculated. I said, well, we're about 7% away from getting back to even and no contributions. And I told him, hey, this can happen fast. Or it can't happen fast, but sometimes it happens really, really fast. We've seen a couple of weeks this year, we've seen 3%+ moves in a single week, so it can happen fast. But the one thing that no one ever quite understands is the math of recovery, where when you were down 12, and even though the market might be up 7, you don't need just another 5% to get back to where you were. You needed about 7% more to get back to where you were. Doug, we've been preaching on the math of recovery forever.
Forever. More than a decade, we've been working through this sequence of returns when you retire, but then also just the math of recovery. And it is interesting. We were at lunch today talking about, I think, one of the indexes, maybe the NASDAQ 100, was down 32%. And even though, and I think Rod is still with us, Rod could probably give us a good indication where the NASDAQ has returned so far this year. to get back to even on that particular sleeve is actually 47% return. And that's why people do have a little bit of this taking a step back and saying, wow, what as good as it's been so far in the first 4 months, I'm still not getting back to even. And this is why we preach and we talk about, and we always go back to this, what is your personal profile look like? What does a coordinated portfolio look like? And what is makeup time when it comes to recovering your dollars in retirement when you're not making contributions?
Rod, a math quiz for you real quick. Do the math for me. I have $100 invested. Now it's worth $50. What's my loss?
$50.
50%, right? In percentage?
Yeah.
Now, what is, percentage is it going to take me to get back to my $100?
100%.
That's the math of recovery, yes. Folks. And it's always easier to lose it than make it back. So you got to stay in there, stick it in there, keep it in there if that's what the purpose of the money is. Rod, any final words of wisdom before we let you go?
A couple of things. One, so to answer Doug's question, as far as the road to recovery for the NASDAQ now, what I have is the total composite, not the triple Qs, but those numbers are relatively similar because we know that the big boys tend to drive these indexes. You're up 13.98% through yesterday's close. So you got a long ways to go as far as the road to recovery if all of your exposure was to the NASDAQ last year and you lost that 32%. The other thing that I would say is in relation to your conversation with the client and the high watermark, sometimes we have to be extremely cautious of latching onto that high watermark because it's very possible that the market was just extremely overvalued at that point in time. So you shouldn't have ever had a value of that except for the fact that the market continued to go beyond what fair valuation was at that point in time. So obviously we always want to get back to there, but we do have to be conscious of the fact, was that dramatically overvalued at the price that we got to at that point in time, or was it kind of a fair value that it changed? I don't know that I'd call it dramatically overvalued, but at that point in time, we were priced slightly overvalued because we were paying an earnings multiple into the 20s, but yet we knew that inflation was going up and that interest rates were going to follow it up as the Fed finally acknowledged, yes, inflation is real, it is here, and we have to start fighting it.
Doug, didn't you enjoy that dramatic pause Hot Rod gave me when I asked him that question, 100 to 50, and I heard his HP 12C back there cracking away to come up with the answer. Good job, Rod, as always. We'll talk to you when we get back to the ranch.
I think that was the smoke of my brain trying to calculate in my head that you heard on that pause.
Good one, Rod. Well, we'll talk to you later.
Have a great show.
All right, see you. Let's take a break, everyone. When we come back, I'm headed to France this weekend, actually on Friday night. My plan is to sleep on the plane, but some say that works. Some say it doesn't. And then on to London for a conference. What's all the uproar about? They're increasing the retirement age for public people, public workers, public pensions from 62 to 64. Why is everyone up in arms? Well, Doug is a world traveler. He is an avid reader. He loves history. He loves to talk about different mentalities of different countries, and France certainly has one of those. We'll be back to talk about how they could learn a lot about how we have dealt with Social Security in the past and how we can learn a lot from France. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. I've never been to Europe. I know you're sitting here thinking, Dave, you've been just about everywhere, right? Well, I have been a lot of places, but I've never been to Europe. So I'm very excited about going and learning and witnessing things that I have only seen on TV or read about. And someone very wise once told me that to have a very memorable trip, you must have three aspects to that. One is the anticipation. You know, the excitement, the planning, all of that that goes into a great trip. The participation in the trip itself, being there, doing it, doing fun things. And then lastly, when you come back home, reminiscing, telling pictures, sharing stories, whatever it might be. Three aspects to your travel will make that a memorable trip. And unfortunately, in my world and Doug's world as well, we run at a pretty fast pace. So sometimes it's like, okay, let's hurry up and get there, hurry up and have fun, hurry up and get home, and you lose that. So I can't tell you that I have been anticipating this a great deal because we've been very, very productive at the at the office this past month or 2 months, and it's been pretty busy around here. But nonetheless, I'm going to use this opportunity to anticipate this upcoming trip I will have in a few. And Duggar, they are on fire over there in France about increasing the retirement age from 62 to 64.
Yes, David. And, you know, when we anytime we talk about France, you know, those of us on this side of the Atlantic always think of some of the great spots that have U.S. significance in France, such as Normandy and things of that nature, and our country's alliances back in the world wars, and the way we've loaned them money in exchange for their gold. And then when we came off, you know, the gold peg in 1971, they sent the ships back to get their gold. And, you know, we have really quite a relationship with France, but yet they're very different. Of course, they're French, and they have this view of capital preservation because they know what it's like to have their largest city, Paris, under great attack and under great bombing and things of that nature. So there's a lot of history there, and the people, therefore, have certain demands and requirements of their government. And so as the news has been breaking for the last couple of weeks, and we've been watching this closely, actually it started about three and a half, four weeks ago, that Emmanuel Macron came out and they're trying to push their retirement age from 62 to 64. Now, remember, this is a socialist economy. This isn't a capitalist economy like us. It's a socialist economy. And so the people there, because of all the things that have happened in that nation, they have decided to have, you know, the big safety nets like their national health care, their national retirement system. Everything has been based upon government and for the most part. And so as the government begins to say now to those very same people who have supported this government, hey, we're going to have to move this this retirement age to 62 to 64. It's got people upset, and they're protesting, and they're in the streets. And if you've watched it at all, it hasn't happened just once or twice. I mean, it's been going on for weeks now, and there's a lot to this story.
Their pension system is much like our Social Security system, but even bigger. It is a pay-as-you-go system. And they have seen the writing on the wall for quite some time that their aging population, not enough young people to support that system. So back in 1995, there were week-long mass protests forced the government to abandon plans to reform the public sector pension. So that was in 1995. Nothing happened. Then finally in 2010, again, millions took to the streets opposing the raising the retirement age by 2 years from 60 to 62. But that's the last time anything has happened. In 2014, they tried to do some things, and no one would have anything to do with it. But the bottom line is, you know, France, like Doug said, the pension system with the social support, more generally speaking, is viewed as the bedrock of the state's responsibility in relationships with the citizens. So we can sit back and laugh and make fun of them, but this is a multi-generational thing that, like Doug said, since post-World War II, the social system enshrined the rights of the state-funded pension and health care, which have been, you know, jealously guarded since then in a country where the state has long played a proactive role in ensuring a certain standard of living. France has one of the lowest retirement ages in the industrial world, spending more than most other countries on pensions. About 14% of their economic output is spent on public pensions. So you can imagine people are pretty upset about this. But one thing I read, and I'm going to try to find it here briefly, and this is kind of coming back to the sense of urgency, if I can find it here. Yeah, the labor minister said that without immediate action, the pension deficit will reach more than $13 billion annually every year by the year 2027. And he went on to say, or the budget minister went on to say, the calculus is clear, and I hated calculus. If we don't do the reforms today, we will have to do much more brutal measures in the future, he said Friday. And that is where I'm thinking that the French could have learned a little bit of a lesson on how we have handled this situation with our Social Security blanket, and that is exactly what it is. So when was the last time that the U.S. really dealt with Social Security significantly? 1983. And 1983, they pushed some retirement ages out. They put taxes on Social Security, put some delay credits in if you'd wait to take it, all of that. But it didn't affect anyone, I think, that was over the age of like 27 or 28. So now it's affecting people in a more immediate fashion. Well, again, if they would have dealt with this in 1995, and they said, okay, in the year 2020, whatever, 2023, 2025, this is what's going to happen. We're going to move it from 60 back then, 60, and this year 61, 62, 60. They probably could have got it done. But it appears France is no different than the U.S., and nothing happens in this world until there's a crisis, and then something happens. But the other thing they were in a total uproar about, which I don't like it here either, it's like an executive order, right? When the president can't get something through Congress or can't get something through the House of Representatives, anything, guess what happens? Executive order. Well, then when that executive is gone, a new executive order comes in to reverse it all. Well, that's what they did. They used something like Article 49.1 or something where the prime minister simply said, you know what, it ain't going to pass, so we're just going to make it a law anyway. And that's what really caused people from both sides, far left, far right, to go to the streets. I think in some way not to protest so much the age movement, although that was a big part of it, but also that the overstep of the government as well. People don't like that. In fact, the whole progressive thing that's been going on across the world from, you know, the time that even before when Boris got in, mm-hmm. Donald Trump gets in. I mean, there's been a big push towards that way, and
yes,
he won in a runoff against his right-wing guy.
Absolutely. And it, you know, David, when you think about there's also lessons for us to learn from the French in
right,
this.
Right.
And we have a
yeah.
lot of discussion in this country about how perfect socialism would be. Well, this is a prime example of even in the most perfect social settings that we think, that doesn't mean there can't be real problems. And one of the things you do lose is that executive order situation. I mean, we still have, you know, Senate, Congress, we're able to do the things that we're able to do. I'm not saying they don't have that in France. It's just there is a very significant hand that comes down from the government there. And I think sometimes we think if we just had the government taking care of everything, it would be fine. But no, they're learning the other way.
And what we should learn from France is let's not wait to reform Social Security.
Exactly.
Let's get on
yeah.
it now.
Exactly right.
And
yeah.
I sure hope they do, because in 1983, the Social Security system was in a crisis. I mean, it was on the verge of bankruptcy, and we finally did something to shore it up. Are we going to do the right thing, or are we going to do the easy thing?
Yep.
The easy thing is to, oh, you know what, let's just tax people more. Right. Mm-hmm. Let's raise your taxable wage base. That'll fix it all. Go from one whatever to 250. Yep. Boom. It's done. I'm saying no. Let's not focus on tax revenues first. Let's talk about, okay, what if we went back to the table and said, okay, Will Hayes, Daniel Hughes of the world, your retirement, full retirement age is 70.
Mm-hmm.
Will's 22. Daniel's 18.
Yeah.
They have plenty of time. They don't care.
Yeah.
They don't even think it's going to be there for them anyway.
Right.
So if we do those types of things now, it will help fix the problem. Do we need a little more revenue? Probably. But we can fix the problem other ways. We have a lot to learn from France as well.
Well, and David, let's bring up this next point when it comes to this. So it's been reported in Forbes this last week, and it's true even today with the markets, that the richest man in the world now is Bernard Arnault, who is the owner of Louis Vuitton, luxury fashion retail, right? The richest woman in the world.
What's his first name again?
Bernard.
Bernard, you're welcome.
Bernard, yes, yeah, exactly. The richest woman in the world is Francois Bentancourt Meyer, who is the owner of L'Oreal. So the richest man and the richest woman in the world today. Now, there is some philanthropy and divorces that pulled
some
of these networks down.
There's some irony
here,
right?
But they're from France.
Right.
So in the middle of a pension crisis, the two wealthiest people emerge, and yet they're taxed heavily, and they're still the wealthiest people. So the people who think, let's just tax the rich, it's going to solve everything, not the case, folks. It doesn't work. It's being shown to us firsthand in France as we sit here right now.
We're going to take a break. Why age 65? You know, so 62, now maybe 64 in France will become the new norm. But why in the U.S. 65? Where did that come from? I've got a couple of thoughts on that as well. Fun facts, folks. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, obviously, any retirement age over time, in most cases, obviously not, maybe not in Secret Service or flying airplanes or other things like that, but in most jobs, most career, they push people out to make room for the younger people. Well, that seemed reasonable when, you know, you were having like 10 kids. But now when you don't, you have like one or two. And even the generation before Doug and I had, you know, maybe two or three, four at most, maybe six, I don't know, but not many. That's not the case anymore. But we've been stuck on this, these ages for so long. And I think it's fascinating, you know, obviously, why age 65? Where did that even come from? Well, there's a lot of speculation on why age 65. But keep in mind, when Social Security was first introduced to America in 1935, the life expectancy for an average American was 62. But the Social Security Administration chose 65 as the age that you would be eligible for Social Security. Now, I'll say this. In the early 1900s, there was a guy named Isaac Rubinow that actually argued in front of the Supreme Court that it is commonplace fact that a man after age 65 has a reduction in alertness and cooperativeness. So, for some reason, he was arguing age 65 is a good age to kick the guy out and send him to pasture. But, Doug, there's a lot of history on this age 65. And then it's fascinating how we've grabbed a hold of it, and I'll get to a couple more of those ideas in a minute.
It is, David. And, you know, some of the things that we experience today, such as Social Security, and we've talked about this many times in the show, you know, life expectancies have changed so much since some of these ideas first came about, mm-hmm. and we just haven't necessarily adjusted with life expectancies. And so that has been a big change, but somehow they're rooted somewhere, and it's based upon these people, and then the next decade, and then the next decade, and we kind of anchor back to certain ages versus having this ability to maneuver and to look at different ages.
I look at this a couple ways. Obviously, when the U.S. thought age 65 would be a good age to be eligible for Social Security back then or Medicare today, that naturally becomes a target for retirement, right? Now, when I get to this age, I get Social Security. When I get to this age, I have Medicare. Now we see folks looking at 67. You know, anyone born after 1960, it's 67 is their full retirement age. But they can still take Social Security at 62, and Medicare is still available at 65. So that still seems and remains to likely be a bogey for most that have saved enough and want to retire before their full retirement age at 67. Now, what would be the case if we aligned Social Security and Medicare together? Let's say you still can take it at 62 and Medicare 65, but what if Medicare was 62? Would most people then retire at 62? I think we'd have a lot more. COBRA, right? The extended coverage once you leave your employer, that covers 18 months. So we see a lot of people go to 63 and a half. I think most retirements, if you're kind of hanging on, is generally for insurance, right? Health insurance, Medicare. But what if we said, you know what, you're Medicare eligible now at your full retirement age? I think that's a dandy. So most people would now work till 67. That's just, to me, the way it would work. So if you're born in 1960 or 70, like I am, and you now said to me as a 53-year-old, hey, you're no longer eligible for Medicare at 65, but you will be at 67 because that's your full retirement age for Social Security, then my bogey's probably now 67 if it wasn't before. I think there's a lot to that. And then what about moving these ages to 68, to 69, or 70 for those, like I mentioned earlier, age 30 or under, like they did back in 1983? I think this is a very flexible and fixable issue without going crazy with big payroll tax increases, which is, like I said earlier, the easy thing to do. But if we wait too long, that'll be the only way to fix it. And, you know, it's funny because at our office, and Doug's part of this leadership group that we've created, we've been working on things like what are our core values? What is our core purpose as a company? What's our vision? You know, again, are you doing the right thing or are you doing the easy thing? And I believe that we can learn a lot from what we just saw and seen in France of how we should do the right thing and not the easy thing. And, Doug, I think that people that are making the decisions on these retirement ages and eligibility for this or that should really get into the mindset or the psyche of the way Americans think, because not everyone, you know, wants to retire. I'll tell you this. At Indiana University, for years, they had an 18-20 plan. Mm-hmm. You get to 64. You have to retire at 64 if you want the benefits, which is we'll give you full pay for the next 5 years. And, oh, by the way, we'll keep putting money into your retirement account. Great deal for people. Great deal for people. But you know what? Some people weren't ready to retire at 64. We've had several clients that literally gave up mm-hmm. that benefit, which is massive, because they wanted to continue to work at Indiana University. Now, could they quit IU? Sure, but they can't get another state job. They'd have to move to Ohio. They had to move to Missouri, which we've had clients do that before.
Yes.
You know, double dip here and there. So, Doug, I just think there's a lot of psychology behind eligibility for benefits and when people would actually pull the trigger and retire.
And, David, you know, when we teach the class that we teach one retirement plan today, you do one on taxes and retirement, we cover life planning, and we cover this whole idea of retiring your way. And the traditional view of retirement, we always go back to this, was all based on numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You worked at the same place for 20, 30, 40 years at a specific age. You retired. You got your Social Security. It was so simple. But once retirement planning got onto our shoulders, was put in front of us with all the decisions that have to be made to do a coordinated portfolio, to plan your income, to plan Social Security, to plan Medicare. Once that all got in our laps to have to make those decisions, then we also began to get a little independence of, I want to keep going. I'm not going to be told when to leave for my pension. I'm not going to be told. I'm going to do this my way. And anytime that the decisions are up to us, you have to hope you're making good decisions and getting good guidance and good information along the way. And that's where this kind of is at.
We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we did teach a class last week at Ivy Tech called Taxes in Retirement. It was a beautiful day outside. I mean, gorgeous day. Doug introduced me. No one knew it was us teaching the class, which I thought was interesting that that's the way it was marketed or advertised. But that was fine because when people show up, they're surprised. Oh, wow, it's you guys. And Doug made the comment, this is a beautiful day. You either really, really wanting to learn about taxes or, you know, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
But the place was absolutely packed, which makes me think and understand that it isn't about me showing up to teach a class. I'm not the draw. It's not the weather being bad or good. It's the fact that people are starving to learn how to not be put in a bad spot in retirement. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to give you some of the things I learned from that class and what people seem to be really confused about and somewhat fascinated about. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, I'm looking out the window on this Thursday, and the evenings are getting longer, which is awesome. I went fishing on Wednesday night, Lake Monroe, saw a beautiful eagle in Moores Creek. Did I tell you that?
Yeah,
so cool. Big guy, sit right above us while we were fishing, and then it took a big swash across the bay there, the cove, and went down. I thought we were going to see, you know, him grab a fish, and he kind of gave me a little bit of a head fake and took off again. But it was great outside. So I'm looking out of One City Center right now at a Taco Bell roof and a Yogi's Bar and Grill, and it's not very busy outside right now, but I'm sure it will be as the weather continues to be awesome around Bloomington. And graduation weekend will be here like another month or less than a month, I guess. So it'll be hopping around here right around, I think, May 3rd or something like that. So anyway, Doug, we have been teaching classes on retirement issues for, it seems like, ever. And we did taxes and retirement this week. Beautiful day. Tons of people were there. And, I didn't say this to people, but when it comes to money in retirement, you can give it to four things. You can give it to places, or yourself, maybe five things. Places, family, charity, or the Internal Revenue Service. And the more you leave to the IRS, the less you're going to leave to all these other things. So we talked about Roth conversion planning. We talked about how it meant so much to your surviving spouse. It means so much to your kids or grandkids. I talked about doing a small Roth conversion at an early age and then creating a multi-generational cascade of tax-free wealth with that single Roth conversion. But one of the things that we spent more time on than I anticipated was the federal estate tax and gifting. People were fascinated and confused. Lots of confusion over what we're up against, number one, as far as where taxes are likely to go in the future, just simply to pay for the things we've already promised, and what you can do and what the outcomes will be. But the thing they were confused about was gifting. So I thought I'd take a moment and talk about gifting. So when the tax cuts were enacted in 2017, Basically, it doubled the federal tax exclusion amount. And when it did that, it also doubled the gift tax, my lifetime gift tax exclusion amount. So currently, in 2023, if I have $12.9 million of net worth when I die, which includes everything, including, by the way, the death benefit on all of your life insurance policies, over $12 million, then your estate would be subject to federal estate tax. Now, if you're married, you both have $12 million. So you basically have $22, $23 million of estate that you can pass tax-free, at least federally tax-free. Now, in 2026, when all of this sunsets, it all gets cut in half. So it goes from 12 to 6. Now, that may not be a big deal for a lot of you, but in my career, this started at $600,000, went to $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, $10 million, zero, back to 2, 5, now to 12, and then back to 6. So it's like a roller coaster ride. So who knows what it will be whenever you pass away. But the thing that got confusing was gifting. Folks would say, now I can only give $17,000 away to someone right before they're taxed or I'm taxed. No, the answer is no. No, you can give whatever you want, up to $12,920,000. So if I turned around and gave Doug $2 million today, which Doug...
That's fine. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're not shaking on it. But nonetheless, I give you $2 million bucks. Well, it's over $17,000, but who cares? The extra... Let's say I gave you $2,017,000. So the $17,000 is non-reportable. The other $2 million is. So I just fill out a form called a gift tax return. I send it in and say, oh, you know, by the way, I used to have $12 million to give away during my lifetime. Now I have 10. No tax paid by me, none by him, none by anyone, but it goes off my lifetime exclusion amount. So in most cases, unless you just have a really nice big net worth, you can give away practically anything you want. That was a big confusion for people because, I mean, they were like, what, what? I mean, yeah, you can. So when people have confusing points, I always want to clear them up. And what did we say as we were coming up the elevator today? Take complicated issues and make them simple.
Take confusing issues and make them simple.
There you go.
Yeah.
Let's take a break, come back, wrap up this big show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, everyone, I'm going to be in Paris on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, actually Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, fly to London on Wednesday. I'm going to leave the show for the next 2 weeks in the hands of the capable crew at Conference of Financials, so I'm sure this won't be the last time you hear Douglas Hughes, probably even a Ryan Belcher or Wayne Thacker or Josh Norris, certainly a Hot Rod Holloway appearance. And Doug, you have a really cool event coming up. We only have about a minute and a half to talk about this, maybe a minute to go.
Yeah, one of a friend of our office and a connection that we have named Julian Albertini is a portfolio manager at First Eagle Global and Global Income, and then also Rising Dividends Fund. And he is from France, so he has, I mean, very extensive knowledge about what we're talking about. But he's coming to do a shareholder event. And one of the unique things about that strategy is they own a great deal of gold bullion. And so as we're all sitting here watching gold get very close to all-time highs, it's going to be a really interesting conversation of why central banks are buying gold, what's going on with the world's currency situation, also where they're finding value companies that they're able to buy around the world.
And we're having him come to Bloomington.
Come to
Bloomington. You guys are going to do a shareholder meet at the Country Club.
That's right.
It's for clients only. Then you guys are going to go to dinner, maybe between the Country Club and Malibu or Uptown, wherever you're headed.
Yeah.
Stop here and do a quick show recording.
That would be really great, yes.
And play that while I'm gone, and I'd be really proud of that.
Hey, everyone, I hope we got to
go. Have a great week, everyone. I'll talk to you when I get back from Europe. See you later. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.